We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you for being here. Thank you for dropping by. Thank you for sharing some of your hard-earned time with me and the rest of the Striking Gold fam. This episode, as always, is brought to you by Prize Picks. Daily fantasy sports. Get up in it. PrizePicks.com/gold. Promo code gold. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Today we're going to talk about kind of just a general conglomerate, a general gathering, a general collection of 49ers news and developments throughout the week as they prepare for their second to last regular season game against the Washington Commanders. Anybody that's ever listened to Striking Gold knows what I'm thinking right now. Please, Commander. It's all about Galaxy Quest, one of the greatest comedies ever made. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's pretty incredible. Galaxy Quest, Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman. List goes on. I mean, just the cast in and of itself is pretty incredible. Let's go see. I'm also pulling up here what the Commanders did. Man, the Commanders and Jets last week decided to just have themselves a game, huh? That's interesting. The Commanders lost to the Jets. That tells you where they are. That tells you where they are. All right. So let's get into it. First thing we're going to start off is the same thing we typically start off with. One, I'm going to apologize. I'm in the same place I was at last podcast. You know, we are in the midst of developing, cultivating, and raising a one-week-old baby. Robert Newton Lauder VI turned 1 week old on Sunday at 11:44 p.m. I should post some silly Instagram post with like a chalkboard and 1 week old and the baby's like, it's like laying on a blanket next to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some of those pregnancy posts, man, are just, there's something else. There's something else. Okay. So my mind is not all to here. I mean, it rarely is. You guys listen to the podcast. You know, my mind is rarely all the way here and I'm constantly saying stupid things and poking fun at myself more than anybody else, but I'm going to do my best. But we always start with injuries. And this little sum up is courtesy of Jennifer Lee Chan of NBC Sports Bay Area. Shout out to Jen. So, we'll start with the bad, and then I'll hit you with the good afterwards. So, not seen in the early portion of practice on December 28th, that is Thursday. Starting left guard Aaron Banks is still out with a toe injury that he re-aggravated against the Ravens. He missed 2 weeks with that injury the last time when he first suffered it earlier in the season. Offensive lineman and backup swing tackle Jalen Moore is still out with a concussion. He came in to back up Trent Williams and was immediately exited with a head injury. Wide receiver Juwan Jennings is still out with a concussion, which is longer than normal. I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there that should ever downplay how bad a concussion can be, how bad the symptoms can be, and how long somebody could be kept out with them. But Juwan Jennings is still out. And obviously he's the 49ers kind of wide receiver three option. In relation to that, third round rookie Danny Gray's practice window was opened. So maybe he gets activated and put back into the mix this week. I can't really say that he or the 49ers have anything to show for his third round draft status yet. We'll see a lot of speed, definitely something useful to the offense, but sometimes it just doesn't materialize. I'm not making that call yet. There's obviously not a lot of opportunity in the 49ers offense behind Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, and even Christian McCaffrey's catch a lot of passes. So we'll see if anything develops from the activation of Danny Gray behind Juwan Jennings. Defensive lineman Eric Armstead is still out with a foot and knee injuries. Big one there. Kyle Shanahan kind of said he was reluctant to label it serious, but it's kind of a reoccurring thing based off previous injuries and just kind of reading the tea leaves. I'm not sure when the 49ers expect to get Armstead back. Backup tight end Ross Dwelly is still out with an ankle, and starting rookie safety Jair Brown was seen working with trainers on the side field. He's out with a knee injury. Kyle Shanahan said it might be serious. It's something that they're evaluating. And that's a big blow because obviously the 49ers already lost safety Talanoa Hufanga to a torn ACL, right? I get my season-ending injuries mixed up. And that's not really a joke. I just get them mixed up from time to time. And Jair Brown was coming in to replace him. Had his. So you can see where the confusion and the lack of basic grasp of the English language was coming from. Had his ups and downs. And veteran safety Logan Ryan is apparently, per defensive coordinator Steve Wilks, stepping in to replace Jair Brown, which is great in terms of a knowledge and a veteran experience in big games. Not great in terms of just being a veteran on the back end of his career, but we'll see. He might be able to contribute. So again, that was the bad news. Those are all the players that currently aren't practicing or per gen weren't seen in the early portion of practice back in the mix. So we're back in the good things right up top. The as good as it can get, left tackle Trent Williams back at practice, said it was a minor groin injury, should be good to go. Defensive lineman Javon Hargrave still practicing. Wide receiver Deebo Samuel was limited with a neck injury yesterday. He's out at practice. Linebacker Oren Burks, he's back out there. Cornerback Ambry Thomas, he's out there. He was out with a hamstring injury. And running back Elijah Mitchell is also out there. So the 49ers have their fair share of injuries, fair share of impact injuries, fair share of starters. But that is a good list of people that are back at practice. Trent Williams, Javon Hargrave, Deebo Samuel, Oren Burks, Ambry Thomas, and Elijah Mitchell. So those are the injuries to start. And as you know, I mean, kind of from here on out, from here forward, it's basically, it should be, and it probably has been, especially with the Ravens matchup, it should be playoff atmosphere for the 49ers from here on out. They are in must-win mode. Now, obviously, they can lose one of these next two games and still be in the playoffs, but the odds are very good that if they've lost one of the next two games, they have also lost their first seed, and which would give them a first-round bye in the playoffs. So from here on out, the 49ers are in playoff mode. The next 2 weeks are it. I mean, the next 2 weeks could define kind of what their playoff run looks like and just how far they have to go or where they have to travel in order to get to the big game. Good time to look at playoff picture. So right now, the 49ers are the first seed at 11-4. The Eagles and the Lions are both at 11-4 as well. But the 49ers hold the tiebreaker. They hold a head-to-head tiebreaker against the Eagles, and then they hold a conference tiebreaker, conference record. 49ers are 9-1, Lions are 7-3 against the Lions. So that those two tiebreakers are what are holding the Eagles and Lions at bay and keeping the 49ers in the number one seed. if they were to lose another, if they were to lose a game and neither of those other two games, other two teams lose a game, then the 49ers, I believe, if I'm looking at this right, will drop down to the fifth seed, which would likely put them with the same record as the Dallas Cowboys. The 49ers, again, holding a head-to-head tiebreaker against the Cowboys. That would put the 49ers would go from the first to the fifth seed. And I believe currently that would slate them to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the first round of the playoffs, which would also, if I'm reading this right, be an away game because the Buccaneers leading their division would be the fourth seed. Worse record, worse everything, but they would be the fourth seed. And as such, the 49ers as the fifth seed would need to travel to the Buccaneers for the first round of the playoffs. And then likely after that, every game, every playoff game would likely be an away game because, I mean, you don't hold a lot of sway as the fifth seed. You know, you could play a sixth seed. You know, if you played the sixth seed, then that would be a game that was at Levi's Stadium. And that shows you right there just how important it is that the 49ers hold on to that number one seed, because if they don't, not only do they lose that first round bye, but they lose the likelihood of hosting any playoff matches at Levi's Stadium, which is why I'm basically saying it's playoff atmosphere from here on out, and they get to start this run against a horrible Commanders team by all intents and purposes, a very not good Commanders team. And if you look at their last few weeks, they lost to the Jets 28-30. They lost to the Rams 20-28. They lost to the Dolphins 15-45. They lost to the Cowboys 10-45. They lost to the Giants 19-31. They lost to the Seahawks 26-29. They beat the Patriots 20-17. And then their last respectable, highly respectable game was that 31-38. It was a loss, but it was against the Eagles, and they gave them a run for their money. So a Commanders team that is not good, but also has nothing to lose. I will also offer a shout out to Terry McLaurin. Excellent, excellent receiver. Was one of my fantasy keepers for a couple of years. I just enjoyed watching him play. That was an absolute treat. And then after the Commanders, you have a classic Week 18 matchup. It's Week 18, right? Yeah. 17 and a bye. Got it. Calm down, Rob. Classic Week 18 matchup against the Rams. And the Rams, like I've said multiple times in a row, are playing a great brand of football. And Matthew Stafford is playing a very good brand of football. I'm going to look up his stats real quick. Boop, 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 boop. It's me typing on the computer. How is Stafford playing right now? Right now, Stafford's completing 62% of his passes, 23 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 3,700 yards. Yeah, he's playing well. He's playing well. And so is the rest of that Rams team. So that's going to be a huge matchup for the 49ers, and it's coming. But you can't overlook the Commanders, okay? NFL is a week-to-week business. You can't overlook the Commanders. I always laugh, like, if I were to make a tweet about the Rams and how good they are and the 49ers, it's a big game for the 49ers. Somebody would inevitably reply to that saying, oh, yeah, but we can't overlook the Commanders. And I'd be like, well, I mean, I can. I'm not on the team. I can overlook anybody. I can start talking about Week 18 in Week 1. And I don't think my overlooking the Commanders is really going to impact the 49ers at all. I really don't. But you always have those replies. No, we can't overlook them, man. We got to go week to, we can't overlook them. You're like, hey, man, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not walking around the lockers telling the players that they should probably overlook the Commanders. So you're good. You're good. Everything's going to be okay. So obviously the talking point throughout the week was Brock Purdy's performance against the Ravens and the four interceptions that occurred during the Ravens. Brock Purdy spoke with the media, I believe it was today, and didn't sound overly affected by the game. He said, you know, he even almost backed up the game. Not his performance, but he backed up the way they thought that game was going to go. He said, we thought the game plan was good, and I just fell short. Plays were there. I just didn't execute them. He kind of talked a little bit about managing the excitement. You know, on that first drive, if you go to playlist. So Ravens go three and out. Then Brock Purdy hits McCaffrey for 3 yards. Okay, so McCaffrey 3 yards, incomplete to Juszczyk. Then Kittle for 58 yards. Kittle again for 13 yards. And then boom, interception in the end zone to Kyle Hamilton on a late throw to Deebo Samuel as he crossed over the middle. Ravens were kind of running cover two deep safeties. And Deebo came open behind the first safety on the left. And if Purdy wanted to make that throw, it essentially needed to be a throw that was made early and right down the middle of the field. Instead, he waited, and he essentially threw it right to Hamilton. He said himself it was a bad read, and that was the one interception that Kyle Shanahan said, you know, that was basically inexcusable. That was the bad one. The rest of the three we can get into in a little bit. You've seen them gotten into, but we won't spend too much time on them. But Purdy talked about the excitement of, you know, having a 58-yard play and then a 13-yard play, and then you're about to score, and then bam, you make a bad read, you get a little too excited, and there were check down options available that probably would have at least gotten you a first down or, you know, a few yards and kept the drive going. And he was just talking about managing his excitement. And, you know, with a play like that, with the way Brock Purdy plays football, it's, you're going to get some of those. He wants to push the ball down the field. He wants to be aggressive. He wants to take risks. And I just think that's excusable for a guy that has been playing as good as he is. Now, again, per Kyle Shanahan, that was the only interception, and he was like, yeah, that was the wrong fucking decision. And Purdy knows that. Shanahan knows that. We know that. It was easy to see. But again, I would rather have a quarterback that took chances and was aggressive with the football and pushed it down the field. That's why Purdy, you know, leads the league in air yards per attempt. He's throwing the ball down the field. Inevitably, you're going to get mistakes, especially for a young quarterback. So nothing that really should have set the world on fire as it might have. Purdy did say that, he was confident in the game plan. He felt like the 49ers offense was going to do what it needed to do to beat the Ravens. And some of the numbers speak to that. If you go look you ignore the score, you just went and looked at some of the base numbers of the 49ers versus Ravens. The Ravens had 23 first downs. The 49ers had 21. So toe-to-toe there. The Ravens are only 4 of 11 on third down. The 49ers are 6 of 14. Not much better, but a little better. Semi-respectable, not quite at that 50% threshold. Total yards for the Ravens, 343. 49ers, 429. Average gain per play, Ravens 5.4. 49ers, 6.3. They outrushed the Ravens. They outthrew the Ravens. They out-penaltied the Ravens. That's not exactly a good thing. And then, you know, the number that basically defined the entire game was the Ravens had 0 turnovers and the 49ers had 5. And that's what changes the game right there. And, you know, you just can't. Kyle Shanahan basically pointed to those two stats. You know, when you have 5 turnovers and 10 penalties for 100 yards, you shouldn't expect to win a football game. And that ultimately, obviously, made the difference. And you think about the game, it was only a 14-point game. It was only a 2-score game. If just even a couple of those turnovers get batted down rather than into the air, then you're probably talking about a completely different game that the 49ers win, or it comes down to the wire and no one's really getting, for lack of a better word, crucified for their performance, kind of as Purdy is. And then if you go back and look at those and look at that game, you know, and look at what the 49ers did. The 49ers averaged 6.7 yards a carry on the ground. Purdy averaged 8 yards per attempt. He still managed to throw for 255 yards. He was making big plays. Everything about that game looked like the 49ers we've come accustomed to, except that it was against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Now, from my first point is the 49ers were moving the ball against the Ravens. Kittle, 7 catches for 126 yards. Kittle had essentially 100 yards before the end of half. Ayuk, 6 catches, 113 yards. Deebo Samuel, 4 catches, 47 yards. I don't know how he has 4 catches on 12 targets. That's weird. That's a lot of unaccounted for targets. But the 49ers threw for 336 yards in the air. Sam Darnold managed to score an interception of his own. So they were moving the ball. They were running it well. They were throwing it well. Obviously, the one massive asterisk to that were Purdy's turnovers. He made some mistakes. He got a little ahead of himself, and he also got a little unlucky. Guy Haberman, I think it was on KBR, mentioned that Purdy had 11 throws that went for 10 yards or more. Like, he was dealing. And then everything kind of caught up to him. And it reminded me of, I don't know who posted this. Where did I see this? But the quicksand scene where he's talking about, you know, you're just digging yourself into a deeper hole. And then all of a sudden you realize you can't get out. You can't move. You can't breathe. Well, that's kind of what happened to Purdy. And his first interception was really his worst. The one where he just had a misread and threw it right to a Ravens defender that didn't really even have to work for the interception. And then the second interception was, it was going to be a short pass to Deebo Samuel, and the corner that was covering Deebo Samuel blitzed and ran right into the pass. Now, it's such a quick pass that by the time Purdy realized it, and it's supposed to be a quick pass, head coaches like, you know, Kyle Shanahan types will get pissed off at you if you don't make that pass quickly. And he made that pass, and by the time the ball was out of his hands, that corner was already blitzing, and all he did was put his hands up and bat it into another defender, and that was it. So that is just shit luck. The third interception was, I kind of figure it somewhere in the middle of being shitty luck and stupid decision-making, where he scrambled around. Purdy acted like he had some sort of free play. There were flags on the ground, but they were all on the offense. And Purdy scrambled around and then threw it to Kittle, who was coming back to him. But there was a defender right next to Kittle coming back to Purdy as well. And they both kind of impacted the ball at the same time. Again, doesn't fall down, flies into the air and right into the hands of a defender. So that's two passes that you see way more commonly get batted down or into the ground than you do into the air for someone else to intercept. So some shitty luck, some questionable decisions in there. And then the fourth pick, which, you know, four interceptions is four interceptions. At that point, it's just a bad game. But Colt McKivitz got beat again and got Purdy hit right as he threw the ball again. 49ers, their first draft pick this year is not an offensive tackle. And I don't know what they're doing, but. So that fourth pick was on McKivitz, and those for Purdy's four interceptions. And one of them was egregious. One of them was on its way to egregious, I thought. That scramble interception was just a little shaky on the decision-making. And then two of them were just straight-up unlucky and not his problem. And let's say if those two interceptions that were more unlucky than his fault just get batted down, then you're probably looking for, you know, the Ravens are scoring probably at least one or two less touchdowns or probably scoring. You know what I mean? I don't want to get into this multiverse of madness shit. It just wasn't as bad as it looked upon second review. You know, the game, it was 16-12 at halftime. And then you had that third quarter that just got out of hand. The 49ers went punt, interception, punt, while the Ravens went touchdown, touchdown, field goal. And both of those touchdowns were from the 49ers side of the field. So it just really snowballed out of control. Brock Purdy said it. Other 49ers have said it. Other people have said it. I think the 49ers would have a little bit of confidence if they had to meet the Ravens again. We know the Ravens are going to have confidence, but I do think Purdy and the rest of the 49ers team would not exactly shy away from the, and it obviously wouldn't be for a while, but I don't think they'd shy away against another matchup with the Ravens. In the meantime, you've got just an absolute. And it's so lame, too. The amount of, like, I told you so's that just randomly sprung up like weeds. People that have basically been forced to shut up throughout, you know, weeks and months of the fact that Purdy just kept playing game after game after game after game. And then he finally has a rough game. And then all these, boom, I told you so. You know, like, it's like the worst existence in sports. People that haven't said shit the entire time when Purdy's been playing well. And the moment he struggles, they sprout up like weeds you don't want. And, start talking to you about it. And I've mentioned this before, but the funniest part to me about people with those types of attitudes is like, cool, man, you're actively rooting against the last pick of the draft from last year that has basically battled through all conceivable odds to not only be the first Mr. Irrelevant quarterback to throw a completion in the NFL, but to actually develop into a starting caliber quarterback for a Super Bowl, for a team with Super Bowl aspirations, and play at an MVP consideration level. Like, congrats, man. You really did a good job on not wanting that to happen. Like, I just don't understand where they find their footing and disliking somebody who is doing everything against the odds. It's blows my mind a little bit. Like, why are you so unhappy? Who hurts you? No one's, you know, what's wrong? So anyways.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's get into Prize Picks real quick. Okay. I want to talk to you guys about my Prize Picks because I think they're kind of interesting. I'm kind of like last couple weeks of the season. We're just going to send it. Now, first, if you don't know what Prize Picks is, daily fantasy sports, you get on there, you pick 2 to 6 players, you pick the stat projections that you want to target: receiving yards, passing yards, rushing yards, field goals, sacks, tackles, whichever one you're picking more or less, and you're watching the winnings roll in. Daily fantasy sports. Nobody does it better than Prize Picks. What I like most about Prize Picks is its simplicity, which kind of goes hand in hand with its quickness. You can get onto Prize Picks. It's very easy to navigate. It's intuitive. It's not overly complicated. And you can have an entire lineup set, picked, and selected and entered in a matter of 60 seconds, which I really like. That's what I really like. If you're going to jump on board, which you should, because the odds are very good that you're going to do better than me. If you're going to jump on, go to prizefix.com/gold and use the promo code gold, and they're going to match your first deposit up to $100. Okay, why not? Why not? You put in $100, you're going to have $200 in your account. Now, my picks this week, we'll get into Washington. We'll get into the Commanders. Defense, not good. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going Brandon Ayuk to have more than 66 receiving yards. I'm going Brock Purdy to have more than 256 passing yards. I'm going Christian McCaffrey to have more than 87 rushing yards. I'm going Jacoby Brissett, Washington quarterback, to have less than 227 passing yards. And I think Joey Sly, Washington kicker, makes more than 1.5 field goals. And that also was a demon play that I thought was pretty gracious. So I'm doing a $10 flex play. When you do 5 players or more, they automatically put it into a flex, which means that if I get 3 out of 5 correct, I win $4. Woohoo! If I get 4 out of 5 correct, I win 20. And if I get all 5, I win $120 off a $10 flex play. So that's what I'm going with. And I'm feeling good about it. I've had it. I'm done. I'm not losing anymore. We're finishing out the regular season strong. I've got 2 weeks left. I'm going 2 for 2. And you guys have heard me say it. Heard it here first. I hate when people say that online. Like, no. How could you possibly know that you were the first person to say that? Did you search your own phrase on the internet and make sure nobody else had said that before you said heard it here first? I don't fucking think so. Do not lie to us. We're not idiots. Scam artist. Anyways. Appreciate you guys. Commanders. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking to you about the Commanders. I feel like that's almost an insult to your intelligence. Maybe not, but I'm just, you know, yep, Chase Young, eager to get back. you know, his Chase Young revenge game. He's going to have 18 sacks in this one game. But there's not a lot going on with the Commanders that we can really take seriously from a 49ers standpoint. Is it a trap game? Eh. You know, is it a letdown game? Eh. I really don't buy into that at this point in the season. The 49ers absolutely know what's at stake, what's at risk, what they've got to do. If you somehow manage to fall into any sort of a letdown or a trap game at this point of the season with this much on the line, then it's just you failing to realize the importance of the moment. And, you know, as coaches, that's on you to get the team in the right mindset. Standouts on the team, not a whole lot going on. You've got Terry McLaurin again, who has 885 yards, three touchdowns, and he's just doing what he can in an offense that was for the longest time quarterbacked by Sam Howell, who has now been replaced by Jacoby Brissett, who in his limited games, he's played in three games. He completed 18 of 23, which is almost 80%, 224 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions. So in the very short period of time we've seen Jacoby Brissett, he was solid. Is he going to be solid enough to go up against a 49ers defense and dice him up? Common sense would tell you no, but crazier things have fucking happened. So with the Commanders, you have a defense that just isn't good. They're not good defending the run or the pass. They've given up 35-plus points per game over the last 6 weeks. They're the most points allowed in the NFL, the most yards per game. They're giving up 4.5 yards per carry on the ground. They're worst in the NFL in passing touchdowns allowed. They're among the worst in interceptions. They're bottom 10 in points per game, yards, rushing yards. They're primarily a passing team, too, and that's probably because they're playing from both behind the sticks and behind the scoreboard the vast majority of the time. And that right there, knowing that about the Commanders' defense, is why I went so heavy on Prize Picks for Brandon Ayuk, for Purdy, for McCaffrey. I think the 49ers' offense is just going to be a little pissed off about how that game went against the Ravens, and they know it's time to get right. And like I said, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Kyle Shanahan has got this team in a playoff mindset. They probably should have been last week. And again, there's a lot of things last week that point to a team that was kind of in that mode. Things just got out of hand for Brock Purdy at quarterback, and the rest of the team just couldn't catch up. So in the end, you've got a team that's not good, competing for one of the top draft picks in the NFL. They in no way should pose any sort of a threat or challenge to the 49ers. Yeah, the 49ers do have to travel pretty much across the country. You know, it is an early time slot game. Things can get weird. Weirder things have happened, but a lot of times the things you think are weird end up not being weird, and the team that should kick ass does kick ass. And that's really as deep as the analysis should go for a 49ers team that just lost a tough one against the Ravens, and now they're going to go into Washington just a little irritated, knowing that that's week one and they've got to go 2-for-2 in the last 2 weeks. In other news around the NFL, you've got the absolutely ridiculous, bonkers Cam Newton and Deebo Samuel saga where, you know, Cam Newton tried to start talking about Brock Purdy, which is funny because Cam Newton called Brock Purdy a game manager, meaning he doesn't turn the bottle over. He takes care of it. He does what the team needs the team to win. And then he posted like some detective emoji after Purdy has a bad game. And I'm like, well, that would make you incorrect anyways, because a game manager doesn't turn the ball over four times. So, you know, I don't even know why you're chiming in. Well, and Deebo Samuel replied to that, and Cam Newton replied to that. And Deebo Samuel is like, well, you are... Sorry, you are, you know, inviting me on your podcast one day and then talking about my quarterback the next. And then you find out that Deebo Samuel's got all these text messages from Cam Newton in his super special wingdig font, you know, that he sends around, which is, I hope he really doesn't text like that. That would be immensely frustrating. You know, obviously seeing a blue bubble pop up for an iPhone user is just like, all right, cool. Things are going to be civil here. But then seeing a blue bubble covered in text like that, I'd be like, shut it off. Get it out of here. Well, apparently, Deebo Samuel was not receiving texts from Cam Newton. He was receiving texts from some random-ass kids that had Deebo Samuel's number and were acting like Cam Newton. Deebo Samuel's deleted all the tweets. I don't know what Cam Newton's done in regards to it. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm absolutely expecting a Netflix special on this, you know, kind of like the Manti Te'o thing. Like, I want to see how Deebo Samuel got fooled by these kids into thinking that Cam Newton wanted him on his podcast. Would have been funny if Cam Newton, like, wanted him to meet him at a studio and Deebo Samuel shows up and was like, oh, man, I'm ready to do this. Why are you talking about my quarterback? And then Cam's, like, not there and they're doing, like, some Home and Garden Network show or something. I don't know. I'm really going off the rails here, but that whole saga was just absolutely ridiculous. And I'm hoping we get some sort of wild resolution to it soon. I mean, I want Cam Newton and Deebo Samuel on a show live with the kids, the Catfish, Deebo Samuel, so they could just hash it all out. It's all weird, and it needs to stay weird. You know what I mean? Patrick Willis is for the third time in as many years, a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. Fucking A, Patrick Willis. Seems like an obvious choice to me. I mean, the dude played 8 years of football, and seven of those years were playing the game at the absolute highest possible level. He was, during his time in the NFL, just the linebacker mold. You know, as a rookie, he had 174 combined tackles, 4 sacks, 8 tackles for loss, 7 quarterback hits. In his essentially 7 complete seasons, he made Pro Bowl in all 7 of them. Of those 7 full seasons, he was a 5-time All-Pro. He was named to the Hall of Fame All-2010 team. AP Defensive Rookie of the Year when he first showed up. Pro Football Writers of America Defensive Rookie of the Year. There's an accolade. It feels like this is the one. There's not a whole lot of ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, you're talking about somebody that played the linebacker position at the highest level year in and year out for 7 years. I don't care how short his career was. The guy decided to walk away before his body fell apart on him, and that's respectable to me. That shouldn't devalue what he did when he was in the league. You know, Patrick Willis was kind of like this unique blend of being an old school between the tackle linebacker. I mean, he was 6'4", 242 pounds. Just an absolute tank. But he still had the athleticism to make an impact in the passing game. You know, I mean, in 2 of his seasons, he had over 10 pass breakups. I mean, those are good numbers for a corner. 3 interceptions 1 year, 2 in the next, 8 total interceptions in his career. 53 pass breakups in 7 years. I mean, the dude was like a weird blend of what we expected linebackers to do then and what we expect them to do now. You know, I think somebody asked me recently, like, in their prime, would you pick Patrick Willis or Fred Warner? And I said, it depends on when you're asking, because if you're asking me right now, I'd probably pick Fred Warner because he is the spawn of Patrick Willis and what it takes to be a modern linebacker in the NFL. But there was nothing like Patrick Willis in his time, man. Just an absolute unit, a tank on the field, especially when you had him and Navarro Bowman next to each other, 52, 53. You know, that was special times. It's unfortunate that Willis never got a ring, but that shouldn't define his Hall of Fame tenure. It never should, because football is a team sport. How did this guy play the game? And if you're going to argue about his career length, then, you know, to me, it's like, if you're going to be against Frank Gore getting in, then you can't be against Patrick Willis getting in, because a lot of people say, well, Frank Gore wasn't, you know, the absolute best back in the NFL in any one time. And my reply to that is no, but he was one of the best backs in the NFL at a given time. And he put together an absolutely Hall of Fame caliber career. Whereas Patrick Willis, he did not, you know, if you're talking about a career as a whole and you don't think 7 years is worthy of Hall of Fame, sure. But while he was on the field, he was the best linebacker in the NFL. So which one do you want? Do you want the career longevity, or do you want the moniker of being the absolute best when he was on the field? Patrick Willis has one. Frank Gore has the other. I think they're both Hall of Famers. And I think this is probably the year that Patrick Willis gets in. He should get in. I'm not going to say that he probably should have been first ballot. you know, just because you'd have to see what each year's lineup is and how their career stacks up to Pat's. But pretty awesome, man. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Pat is now 38, about to turn 39. Still hasn't even hit 40 yet. That's awesome. That's awesome. One other thing I noticed. Did I have that up here? Do I still have the odds up here? I don't think I do. I think Christian McCaffrey might have a better shot at MVP than we realize. Right? When I looked, he was second in the odds behind Lamar Jackson. And if you look at Christian McCaffrey's season, it's absolutely incredible. And I understand the MVP is a quarterback's award. It kind of needs to be, because even though I think, put it this way, we saw what, okay, you go back to the Eagles game at the end of last year. We saw what that game looked like without Brock Purdy. It was bad. It was horrible. It was unwatchable. That shows you the value of a quarterback, especially on a great team. If you were to remove Christian McCaffrey from that team and put in, let's say, Elijah Mitchell, JP Mason, whatever you want, I'd be willing to bet, and I say this with all due respect, that that game would be a lot more watchable than it was without Brock Purdy. And I think that's why quarterbacks win MVPs, is because they're the most valuable player on the field in any given moment. You pluck them out of the, and everything changes. You know what I mean? So it's not like a slight towards Christian McCaffrey or anything. It's just saying the value of a quarterback could never be understated. And I think that's why it's a quarterback award. And it doesn't have to be, but it almost always is. But my point being was, is McCaffrey is now second, has the second best odds to win the MVP. And Lamar Jackson, although he looked very good against the 49ers, and that's worth a lot, his season hasn't been that great. You know, Purdy's season was quite a bit better in terms of the numbers and the way it looked. But, you know, maybe Hall of Fame voters, excuse me, MVP voters are looking at that like, okay, so we could pick Lamar, who's already won MVP and had a decent season, or we can use this year as an opportunity to finally give the award to somebody else, because no quarterback has really risen completely above the crop and taken it. Now, if they give it to Lamar Jackson, I wouldn't bat an eye. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, I think that especially after his performance against the 49ers, then he's earned strong consideration, no doubt. But with McCaffrey having just an unbelievable season, maybe he garners more Hall of Fame votes than we think he will, because I keep saying Hall of Fame, but I mean MVP. Because technically, he's having a much more impressive season than Lamar Jackson. I mean, again, just to go through the stats, the accolades, 258 carries for essentially 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns. That's 5.4 yards per carry. He also has 63 catches for 537 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he is just less than 100 yards, I think, away from, less than 100 yards away from eclipsing the 2,000-yard mark. Yeah, he's at 1,932 yards. He averages 6 yards every time he touches the ball, and he scored 21 touchdowns. You know, if there ever was a year to not give it to a quarterback, it's this one. Lamar Jackson, although great, hasn't had a year anywhere close to the year he won MVP, and Christian McCaffrey is having the season. So I would say, depending on how these last two games go, there's still a chance that somebody in a 49ers uniform could walk away with that MVP. It'd be a hell of a thing, you know, and I think Christian McCaffrey's earned it, no doubt. But again, would it really shock anybody if Lamar won it obviously a quarterback won it? No. Did I leave anything out? Nope. Commanders Sunday, 10 a.m. I'm getting that right, right? I'm not like sending you guys to your TVs at the wrong time, especially after telling that story of that guy that was ready for the game on Sunday, even though the 49ers played on Thursday. Oh, one of the funniest social media posts I've ever seen. Okay. Yep. Commanders, 10 a.m. Sunday. It is Thursday. What's the score on the Thursday night football game? Like it matters. Like anybody cares about the Browns and the Jets. Let's see. Live right now. 20-34. What a barn burner. How much time is left? 8:50. Okay. All right. I don't even bug you guys with that. I don't even know why I'm talking about it right now. I apologize. But thank you, everybody. Happy holidays. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you tuning in. Remember, after the game, takeaway time on my Twitter account. Reply to that post and get yourself in the pod. No excuses. I want to see some new faces. I don't want to see any less of the regulars. Come on, guys. Come back here. Sit down. I want to see you guys here. Okay. But, let's reel some other members into the Striking Gold fam. Make sure you guys are retweeting it, spreading it out there. Send it far and wide to the masses. Appreciate you guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Striking Gold. Follow me on Twitter at @Rob_Louder. Sometimes I tweet cool things. Sometimes I don't. If you want to leave a little bit more support for the pod, you being here listening is the ultimate form. But if you want to leave a little bit more support, get on whatever app you're listening to. Leave us a 5-star review. Write some words down if you want to. If you don't want to, it's okay. Appreciate you guys. All right. My name's Rob. This is Striking Gold. And we're signing out.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.